Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, new outbreaks of violence rocked Syria over the weekend, straining a fragile ceasefire and calling into question the ability of the new transitional government to exert its authority across the whole of the country. A ceasefire had been in place since the 19th of July. It ended a week of clashes between Druze militias in the south of the country, Bedouin tribes and government forces. Christina Lamb is foreign correspondent for the Sunday Times. She's recently returned from Syria and she joins me on the line now. Good morning, Christina. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
First of all, I mean, this is not your first time in Syria, but was it your first time under the new regime? And if so, how did you find it?
Yeah, it was actually the first time since 2016. So things have changed a lot because obviously in 2016, it was, you know, full Assad regime, bombing of Aleppo going on and lots of people being arrested and disappeared. So things are very different since he left in December, or since he was forced to leave, and the new administration under Ahmed al-Sharaa, who was a former rebel leader and jihadist, but says that he has changed, which is, I think, a question everybody is, you know, waiting to see what will happen. And what has happened in the 7 months since all of that euphoria when Assad fell is we've had these various outbreaks of sectarian violence and, you know, a lot of violence. So I was there. I went to the south to Suweida, which is where the Druze minority live, and they're literally living under siege at the moment.
Well, let's start there, because you did go to Latakia as well, on the coast,
yes.
Where the Alawites, the minority to which Bashar al-Assad belongs, where they're based as well. Well, let's start with the Druze and the most recent outbreak there. What, I suppose, was the flashpoint for the violence, and how did the government respond?
So actually, the flashpoint was just a small incident, which was that a guy, a trader of vegetables, was driving his truck on the highway and was kidnapped by some of the Bedouin tribes who live alongside the Druze. So then the Druze kidnapped some Bedouin back. And so really it was, you know, a local dispute. These things often happen. But it so spiraled out of control that we actually ended up with Israeli airstrikes on the Ministry of Defense in the center of Damascus. That became a major thing. More than 1,600 people have been killed, including, you know, some really horrific things, which I heard from people when I went to Suweida.
Yeah, you travelled and you talked to people who had been victims of the violence, people whose family members had been killed. What was their sense of the role of the government in this conflict between Bedouins and Druze?
So what they said was basically, you know, the first couple of days with this fighting back and forth, which then did become very violent, the government then sent in its troops supposedly to quell the situation. But in fact, everybody you speak to really on both sides say that it had the opposite effect and it exacerbated the situation. And there are a lot of claims that government forces were involved in some of the horrendous massacres and extrajudicial assassinations. And it was because of that, the Israelis, who also have their own Druze community, then launched these airstrikes to try and force the government troops to leave, which they did. But then what happened was you had tribes from all over Syria, lots of former jihadists and others, then all went south to join the fight. And this is really the problem, that you don't have a proper army in Syria today. The Assad army all basically disbanded itself pretty much because they were worried about reprisals and all were downing their uniforms and fleeing when the rebel forces took over. But what's replaced it is all these different disparate rebel groups, some of whom are jihadists. It's not clear that the interim president Ashraf really has full control over all of these groups. I met some of these people, and the things they say, you know, are really horrific.
Who may be wearing the uniform but come from disparate jihadist groups,
exactly,
as you describe them. In what terms do they talk about the Druze, seeing as we're talking about that particular upsurge in violence?
They see them as, they describe them as heretics, as not proper Muslims, and that they should be killed, basically, in their view. So they, you know, weren't really hiding their opinions about this.
Right.
So this is a big problem. I mean, I don't think that al-Shara probably feels that way. He's talked a lot about inclusivity and having a sort of, you know, multi-ethnic Syria and everybody, you know, being able to follow their own religions and participate. But in fact, the administration he's formed is very centralized, doesn't really include most of these minorities. And as I say, I think the biggest problem is that he doesn't really have control over all of these forces.
I think post the overthrow of Assad in Latakia, when the initial, call them government troops or al-Shara's troops went in, there was an ambush on some of those troops, which led to reprisal attacks on the Alawite community, not limited to armed Alawites, but hitting civilians as well. I think
about
1,500 people killed. You travelled there to talk to people about the aftermath of that. What did they tell you about that period of violence and their sense of security now?
So I was surprised because, you know, this happened a few months ago. As you say, some of the what they call remnants of Assad regime tried to mount a sort of counterattack and attacked some of the government forces, killed 16, and then that led to huge clashes and large numbers of people, mostly civilians, being killed. But the fact is, going there today, several months on, there's still a complete atmosphere of fear. Alawites are living in hiding. I met families that were moving from place to place. Young men are hiding in the mountains because they fear that there are people hunting for them, and basically going after anyone they think was a soldier in Assad forces. A lot of these men weren't, but they are regarded as such. And the other thing is, young women are also in fear because there's been a wave of abductions of Alawite women. So there's a real sense of fear in that area. The Alawites are about 10% of Syria's population, so it's quite a big minority.
And the Alawite women you're talking about, the abductions also comes, unfortunately, with sexual violence.
Yes, absolutely. I met one woman who'd been taken for 7 days and then dumped back on the road, and she was deeply traumatized, and she told me that she'd been raped 3 times while she was held. And there are lots of similar accounts.
And in your reports published in the Sunday Times, Alawite women have, in some cases, adopted wearing head covering so that they don't stand out as Alawites.
Yeah, I met women who are wearing hijabs now, which is not part of their belief, and they never have worn before, but they don't want to be recognised. So they see that as sheltering.
If you don't mind the background noise, that's fine.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's the house next door doing work. I'm sorry.
Ever since lockdown, we factor these things into interviews periodically. But I suppose, you know, the sense of whether or not Al-Shara is in control of Syria, number one, and secondly, what the nature of his regime is and how far he has come from his jihadist roots are key to people investing in Syria and rebuilding the country to a functioning economy. It is a crucial period, isn't it, right now in Syria?
Absolutely. And I'm a little surprised that there isn't more pressure from some of al-Shara's international backers to sort this out, because I think, you know...
You mean from the Gulf, is it?
But also from the West too, because there's a strong feeling that this needs to work. I covered what happened in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, where dictators or repressive regimes were toppled, but then, and there was a lot of happiness at the beginning, and then it all went horribly wrong. So I think there is a real feel that this time that shouldn't be allowed to happen. It's slightly different because it wasn't a Western-backed intervention. It was local forces that removed Assad. And, you know, there is still a lot of hope. I flew in on a plane that was absolutely packed with Syrians returning home after many years in exile. And, you know, it was so emotional. They were so excited. They had flags. They were all jumping up as the plane landed. And so, you know, there is a real sense of hope and change. But at the same time, these things are going on, which are taking the country in the wrong direction.
All right. Christina Lamb, Chief Foreign Correspondent with the Sunday Time, who published those articles over the last couple of weeks under the title A Tale of Two Syrias in One Case. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. We're going to be back in a minute. Maura Fey spent the day at the family courts. We'll hear what she saw there.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.